The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Florence Nash from Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I'm going to be reading to you from the April-May issue of AARP magazine. And I thought we would start off today with the cover story, which is on Kathy Lee Gifford. The heading is Kathy Lee Gifford Flips the Script. The longtime Today Show host is finally living her dream, singing and making movies. This is by Judith Newman. Kathy Lee Gifford wants me to feel comfortable, so she pats the seat next to her and scrunches over in the back seat of her town car. She doesn't have to do much scrunching. She is slender, wavy-haired, with an expression that can best be described as resting perky face. We are just leaving NBC Studios. Gifford, 65, was supposed to have the day off from the Today Show, which she has co-hosted for the past 11 years, but she sneaked back on the set to surprise her co-host, Hoda Kotb. As part of a segment about the new Fox competition show, The Masked Singer, Gifford dressed up in a lion costume and sang as Kotby and two others tried to guess her identity, a feat they managed quite quickly, though Gifford tried to disguise her voice. Now we are heading to the Greenwich, Connecticut estate she shared with her husband, football legend Frank Gifford, until his death in 2015. Let me say that Kathy Lee is a dream interview because, to put it mildly, she likes to talk. She is the opposite of standoffish, with her sincerity and eagerness and open expressions of faith. This is a woman who, time and again, has shown a certain kind of fearlessness and authenticity on live television that has captured America's collective heart. First, with 15 years on Live with Regis and Kathy Lee, and then in the fourth hour of Today with her peerless wine-drinking partner, Kotb. For all of her lack of cool, Gifford is, in a sense, one of the original performance artists, to use a fancy term, drawing on her life as material before it was fashionable. Indeed, she's been willing to say or do most anything without embarrassment and, at the same time, reveal the earth-shatteringly personal, as when she has discussed her husband's 1997 affair. During her hosting days, she also acted occasionally in movies, published 4 New York Times bestsellers, released several albums, and appeared on Broadway. But through it all, there was the talk. Is there anything Gifford won't gab about? Well, yes, Kotb insists. In public, you see only about a tenth of who she is, her close friend says. She gives the illusion that we know everything about her, that she's an open book. She is not. There is a very serious person she keeps inside. And that serious person seems to feel, at a stage in life when many of her contemporaries are winding down, that her most creatively interesting days are still ahead of her. Which is why Gifford chose to leave her lucrative Today gig as of April 5, for new challenges. Maybe it is someone else's dream job, she says, but there was a more powerful dream within me that had yet to be fulfilled. All I ever wanted to do from the time I was a little girl was sing and be in movies. When she was in elementary school, she sent Walt Disney a letter asking for a film role. Gifford's bravado may not have paid off that time, but it often does. It's a big part of how she came to write and star in one upcoming movie and direct another. Courage alone doesn't accomplish that, of course, but it can when accompanied by Gifford's brand of smarts, charm, talent, and instinct for what the audience wants. Then came Craig. Here's how the new movies came to be, according to Gifford. Craig Ferguson, the comedian and host of the late-lamented Late Late Show, was guest-hosting the Today Show with me in March 2017. Craig is not a man who holds back. He basically treated 11 a.m. as if he were still on at midnight, so we had to have a 10-second delay, and every day they delayed it a little more. We were like two bad little children. Everyone was terrified. After the run, the two were having lunch, and Ferguson said, "Kathy, if we wait for our agents to get us a job, we'll die waiting. So let's write a movie together." Okay, Gifford responded. This is the kind of showbiz banter that's heard 1,000 times a day and usually forgotten before the sorry chai latte is drained. 2 o'clock in the morning, I woke up and I went, dramatic gasp, I know what the movie should be, Gifford recalls. I just knew. I got up and started writing, and around noon that day, I called Craig. I said, Craig, remember that movie that you and I were going to write? Well, I think I just wrote it. The film, Then Came You, is about a widow who takes her husband's ashes on a trip to the locations of their favorite movies. Ferguson, as good as his word, signed on to the project, playing a curmudgeonly manager of an estate-turned-inn in Scotland. The two meet, and though Gifford doesn't want to give too much away, let's just say, what are you going to do in a movie opposite one of the most swoon-worthy Scotsmen this side of Sean Connery? Ferguson likes the way the film came out. It's a pretty good movie, which might confuse people because I'm usually in movies that suck, he jokes. The film is equal parts hysterical, heartbreaking, honest, and hopeful. An announcement of its release date and distributor is imminent, Gifford says. This is a romantic comedy for people who believe that romance has passed them by and they will never find love again, she notes. When I mentioned that I lost my husband, who happened to be a Scotsman, 6 months ago, she stops and looks at me for the first time during our drive. It's a club none of us wants to belong to, she says. Hollywood has ignored elderly people, and we're elderly, she continues, as I, at 57, shift uncomfortably in my mom jeans. I'm considered a senior citizen, Gifford says, but I've just decided that at this point in my life, I'm not going to use my senior citizen discount to go to other people's movies. I'm going to make movies for them. Moving forward. Gifford insists that the only thing she has in common with her character in the film, Annabelle, is that they are both widows. When Frank died, their children, Cody, 29, a movie producer, and Cassidy, 25, an actress, were worried about Kathy Lee's being alone. That house is loaded with a gazillion memories, she offers, and her voice trembles a little. Sunset used to be a huge thing in our family. Every day, no matter what, we'd yell, Sunset Alert! And we had to stop whatever we were doing, go out, and honor another day. And now I still say it out loud to the puppies, Lola, a golden doodle, and Bambino, a teacup maltipoo. We still go and do it, but sunset alerts are some of my saddest moments when it's just me and the dogs at home. After Frank's death, Gifford stopped socializing. When you're part of a couple, you don't realize that the whole world is just made up of couples, she says, and all of a sudden you're that odd number at a dinner party. You're the fifth, seventh, ninth person at the table. They're always making an adjustment for you. I go to professional things alone, but nothing social. I just wasn't comfortable, and I didn't want people giving me that widow look. In the 3.5 years since Frank's death, Gifford has gone on one date. And it didn't go too well, she says. The man was a very nice gentleman who was just totally wrong for me, and I was totally wrong for him. He didn't share my faith, and I could never spend my life with someone who didn't share my faith. Gifford's father was Jewish, but she was raised in a Christian household and famously became born again at 12. My faith is not what I do for an hour on Sunday mornings. My faith is who I am, she explains. You know, the Bible talks about, in him we live and move and have our being. That means every nanosecond of our life. So what is her solution to the trials of widowhood, at least for now? It's work, friends, and did we mention work? Every year, Gifford goes to Israel. And this year she will be directing a short film there called The God Who Sees, which she describes as a musical journey through the lives of 4 very different people in the Bible. She's writing songs with country music composer Brett James, who scored Then Came You and has written #1 country hits for Carrie Underwood and Kenny Chesney, among others. But please don't say that Gifford is reinventing herself. That's the worst description of what I'm doing, she says adamantly. I'm not reinventing myself at all. I am evolving as an artist and a human being, and I will be till the day I die. People who think I'm a silly person do not know me at all. I'm 10% silly, and 90% dead serious in my life. That certainly squares with Cotby's experience. When she decided on doing Then Came You, she had no backer, Cotby says. She went to start location scouting and casting anyway. Eventually, she did line up several investors. She wills things into existence, Cotby adds. Kathy wants to put beautiful things into the world, which I think is the secret to happiness. Gifford is additionally spending more and more time with newfound friends in Nashville, where she's purchased a small pied-à-terre. The city brings her complete joy. I haven't run into one cynic yet in Nashville. They love God, they love their country, they love music, wine, and food. I'm in heaven there. While Gifford chafes at the notion that anyone would confuse her with her Then Came You character, the two do share a certain outlook. Am I open to new love? She asks. Yes, of course. There's a line in a song I did with Brett called Once Again that goes, "You don't find love, love finds you, in the midst of a moment, right out of the blue. It sneaks up on your heart, hardly making a sound, till all of a sudden you find you've been found." It's one of the best lyrics the Lord's ever given me. A lot of people go looking for love, but I think it finds you. When and if it finds me, I will welcome it with open arms. The same goes with this next phase of her career. With her tenure as talk show host, a job that always felt like her plan B, at an end, Gifford is embracing her long-delayed plan A. "All I ever wanted to do was be in movies and sing," she says. "Now I get to do that." The author of this article, Judith Newman, is also the author of To Siri with Love and a frequent contributor to AARP, the magazine, and a columnist for the New York Times Book Review. Now we have another article in this issue of AARP magazine by Judith Newman. And this is a complete change of mood, I will say. Here is an article called How to Get Your Kids to Hate You. And above the title it says, Infuriate Adult Children in Person, at a Distance, and Even from Beyond the Grave. Part 1, Emailed Cats, Unhappy Holidays, and Other Petty Crimes. For most of my 20s, I kept two phone lines. One number was for everybody except one person. The other was for my mother. This was in the 1980s, before caller ID. I needed to know with absolute certainty that I could pick up my regular phone and not end up in a two-hour conversation about whether I was making enough money, or if I was dating, or if I had heard from that nice boy who dumped me, or whether I knew there was another serial killer in my neighborhood. So much to talk about. Most of these discussions played to my deepest anxieties that I was never going to make a living as a writer and never find someone to love me, though maybe none of that mattered because I would end up chopped into little bits by the serial killer, who probably never called his mother either. My mother wasn't trying to make me hate her. She loved me. And love makes people do strange things. Now that I have two grown sons, I see things all too clearly from my mother's perspective. The endless anxiety, the near certainty that my kids are on the brink of making life decisions they will not be able to walk back, the absolute certainty they won't wear earmuffs when everyone should wear earmuffs. But now there is caller ID, unfortunately, so my sons can tell when it's me calling and not pick up. Before I reach the point of registering myself as a private caller to improve the odds they'll answer, I'm trying to get a grip, and you should too. There are so many ways to push away your adult kids. Here's a small sampling of what not to do. Invade their lives. Want your kid to avoid you on a daily basis? Make sure you have no idea where you end and he begins. Susie Jo Levin's mother was very eager for her to get married. Very. Eventually, Levin, 58, a writer in northern New Jersey, met a lovely guy and got engaged. But the relationship faltered. Our breakup was sad but amicable. I tell my mother, over the Thanksgiving holiday, she has a meltdown. She gathers every speck of childhood memorabilia in her house and stuffs all 10 boxes into my car. Why? I don't know. She was just furious. But this is what every newly disengaged woman needs in a 250-square-foot apartment: a vintage easy bake oven, letters from camp, and old prom dresses. Somehow, says Levin, this was her breakup, caused by her daughter's crappy choices. Fast forward a few years, when Levin met a man she ultimately did marry, and the ex-boyfriend, now a friend, was at their wedding. Her mother turned to the ex and said, "See, this could have been your wedding." Jane Greer, a psychotherapist and author of What About Me? Stop Selfishness from Ruining Your Relationship, has counseled many parents and their adult children. This lack of boundaries, she observes, is the children's number one complaint. It's a reaction to the parent who takes your successes and failures way too personally, who wants to know what you're doing, where you're going, how much it costs, Greer says. And the kid is thinking, what part of on my own don't you understand? Give conditionally. You lend the kids money, then complain about their spending. You give the grandkids Amazon gift cards, but tell them they're only for books. My husband's mother gave us money for a down payment on the house, which meant, as far as she was concerned, she got the key, says one friend. Actually, that was fine. What wasn't fine was that she never, ever knocked before she used it. First, gifts are wonderful, but they do not give you an all-access pass to your adult child's life. And second, a gift with strings attached isn't really a gift at all. Be too meek. The "I don't want to trouble you" sentiment seems so kind and considerate, doesn't it? But very often your desire not to be a nuisance ends up causing a problem that is far bigger than if you had spoken up. Joan Schmidt, 55, a New York City attorney, regularly took her 90-year-old mother to doctors, but occasionally her mom would get into "I don't want to be a bother" mode. One day she decided to ask her 88-year-old friend Millie to drive her rather than ask me, Schmidt recalls. So Millie did, dropping Mom off at a large shopping center in Eastchester, even though my mom apparently didn't know which building to enter. Her mother ended up walking a mile home in the summer heat. In another instance, Schmidt's mother needed her car moved but didn't want to disturb Joan, who was in her home with her, working in another room. So she asked my elderly aunt, who lived across the street and had Alzheimer's and macular degeneration, to do it. We all like to be in control of our lives, but your desire to stay in command may be counterproductive. I say this as someone who often had to rush my parents to the hospital for originally trivial medical problems that they ignored for months. Men, here's an idea. Don't ignore a swelling prostate to the point where you have to be catheterized. Sometimes you must trouble those closest to you. Track their movements. When your children are 15 or 16, you're supposed to worry and be upset when they stay out late and don't call, and you can't help but shame them with tales of the heart attacks you suffered as a result. But now they've grown up and live far away, so why are you still waving the guilt wand over them if you don't immediately know where they are? Or worse, doing what I used to think of as tag-team angst, with my father calling me to say, "Where were you? Your mother was so worried." Your children are not mind readers, says Jane Isay, author of Walking on Eggshells, Navigating the Delicate Relationship Between Adult Children and Parents. They don't know what's going on in your household, or just intuit that you need them or that you are worrying. Sure, feeling guilty may make the child call, but at what cost? Guilt creates resentment, Isay says, and makes it that much harder for them to pick up the phone next time. Abuse your email. Though this is a minor infraction, mindlessly forwarding email to your children can drive them berserk. Every day I receive multiple forwarded emails from my father, cluing me in on world's scariest bridges or unlikely animal friends, says Jancy Dunn, author of Why Is My Mother Getting a Tattoo? And Other Questions I Wish I Never Had to Ask. He means well, but I don't think some retired parents are fully aware of the sheer volume of emails their adult children receive in a day. Deleting all of the forwarded email just becomes one more task. Another tip. When you send your kid an email, you don't have to call to tell her you just sent an email. offer outdated advice. Patrick DeGiusto, a 54-year-old book editor in New York City, reports this recent conversation with his father. You want to put all your money into 7% CDs. Dad, there are no more 7% CDs. That's crazy. I always had all my money in 7% CDs. Doubles your capital every 10 years. Do you still have them? No. Why not? Mumbles indistinctly. That's my point, Dad. You can't find 7% CDs anymore. You can if you look. We all love giving advice in the areas we feel competent in, Greer explains, but be aware that your expertise may be unwelcome if it doesn't address the challenges of today. This is particularly true when it comes to financial advice or financial help. Let's say you have promised to pay for half of a grandchild's college tuition, a loving gesture parents make when their child has a baby. As generous as your $2,500 is, it may not even make a dent in grandbaby Einstein's college costs. So before you offer that kind of commitment, know what you're in for. Make holidays unhappy. Do your kids think of family special occasions with pleasure? Or do your rules and regs make the whole affair feel like a holiday death march? If my sister and I didn't celebrate our birthdays with our mother, she was wounded, says Laurie Lewis, 59, a New York City real estate broker. It wasn't good enough that we all went out during, say, that week. It had to be on the actual day. If I suggested another day, perhaps more convenient, the hurt turned to an angry response of, let's just forget your birthday this year, since it does not mean that much to you. I understand that you want to honor family traditions, but as your kids get older, have spouses, children, and obligations of their own, you have to allow for the possibility that they need to develop their own traditions. Plus, you want to be a joyous celebrant with them, not the enforcer. Second and third guess. You know what another word for constructive criticism is? Criticism. Here are the subjects my mother feels the need to comment on, says Moira Lawson, 59, a health policy advisor who lives in Baltimore. My looks, my parenting, my clothes, my home, how I spend my money, pretty much on everything. My parents have told me repeatedly that they don't believe in divorce, says Mariana Olenko, 52, of New York City, even though I'm divorced and a divorce lawyer. Ellen Stimson, 56, a writer in rural Vermont, admits, it's really hard to pick just one incident here. One Thanksgiving, my mother arrived early before all the other guests, and when I went upstairs to dress, I heard a crash and the sound of shattering glass. I ran back downstairs to find her in the kitchen, standing among the shards that had been my chandelier. She'd apparently decided it was too dirty for company and had taken it down to wash it. But it had been on and was still hot, and it exploded when the water hit it. As I walked in on this chaos, she said, without missing a beat, I guess the dirt was the only thing holding it together. Observes Issei, one of the great skills of parenting adult children is learning to keep your mouth shut. This is a skill I intend to practice soon. I can't wait to tell my two sons once they answer their phones. Now, part two of these instructions on how to alienate your children is Lost Legacies, Business Brawls, Secret Sons, Seven Ways to Make Kids Angry from the Great Beyond by Linda Stern. And longtime journalist Linda Stern is the former wealth management and personal finance editor at Thomson Reuters. Now, I'm not real sure we're going to have time to read this whole section, but we'll do what we can, and if necessary, we will finish it up next week. Here's my hope for after I die. My kids gather and weep copious tears for a bit. Then they pause to say, wow, Mom was so generous and organized right to the end. Let's honor that by being best friends forever. Thanks to a legendary sibling-splitting battle over my grandmother's modest estate, my biggest fear is that my death will create family problems bad enough to estrange my kids from each other. Either that or they will curse me for mistakes I've left behind. So I've been maniacally tying up loose ends, even though I hope to have decades before I pass to that great library/day spa in the sky. That's heaven, right? my husband and I rewrote our wills. I'm updating the beneficiaries of my IRA, and I'm telling everyone what I want done with my body post-death. But when it comes to end-of-life and post-mortem issues, too many people go the other way. Even with the best intentions, they make a hash of their affairs, leaving kids clueless, powerless, and sometimes moneyless, too. Also, really angry. The kids feel like their parents left them a mess, says Sandra Clapp, an estate planning attorney in Eagle, Idaho, who has seen it all. Of course, they love their parents and don't want to be angry, but there is this feeling of, how dare you leave me to figure this out? I've talked to Clapp and other experts to find out what I shouldn't do if I want to leave a harmonious and loving family in my wake. These are the blunders to avoid. Keep secrets. The client had completely pre-planned his own funeral, remembers Oklahoma City estate planning attorney Jerry E. Shiles. He bought his plot and prepaid for the funeral, wrote out the hymns, the order of hymns, who he wanted pallbearers to be, who the minister should be, what the obituary should say, what the eulogy should say. But he never told any of his three kids, who quickly put together a funeral when he died, making different choices and paying double all the way through. 2 weeks later, when they saw Shiles, he said, I'm sure you were comforted to know your dad had everything pre-planned. And that's how they found out. Not all secrets are easy to share, but nonetheless, they should be told. One couple went through a will-writing session with Les Kotzer, a wills and estates lawyer in Thornhill, Ontario. After they left, the husband returned by himself to say, my wife doesn't know this, but I have a son in the Bahamas. Kotzer had to drop the couple as clients. It would have been a conflict of interest for him to write either will once he knew about the secret son. Fail on the follow-through. There are countless stories of elders telling their relatives, when I go, this fill-in-the-blank ring, painting, house is yours. But if that intended gift isn't recorded in a will or an addendum to it, the gift may never pass to that person. Kotzer once saw brothers get violent over a howdy-doody lunchbox. If you want someone in particular to get your special lunchbox, put that in your will. Or consider skipping the whole shebang and selling your item on eBay. Leave a mess, literally. Parents who insist on living in a home they can't maintain or clean provoke resentment in children who can't get them to move or clean up, says Elizabeth Nelson, co-founder of Children of Hoarders, an online support group. Then, when a parent dies, a child often has to spend considerable time and money cleaning out the home and getting it in saleable condition, or they pay a company to come clean everything out at once and then feel guilty about that. While few people meet the criteria of hoarder, many of us do go overboard saving clothes we last wore years ago. I had to waste part of my life clearing up after my mother when she should have taken care of it 30 years ago. Now, we are out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity, but I hope you'll come back next week. We'll finish this article, and I hope you've enjoyed today. I'm Florence Nash, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, triangleReadingService.org. So long till next time. If you have any comments, call us at 919-832-5138.